Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it.
Welcome back. In my last post, The Paradox of Protection, I argued that resilience requires choice, that some dependencies matter more than others, and pretending otherwise spreads resources too thin. I joked, particularly in the written post, that I was very glad that I personally did not have to make those decisions. But, you know, honestly, I kind of do. We all do in our own way. Every time we vote or renew a passport or trust a digital service, we are participating in a system of priorities. Someone somewhere has decided what counts as critical and what doesn't. Which sent me down a research rabbit hole. Who gets to decide what's critical? And what happens when something really truly earns that label? Because the moment you declare a system critical, you don't just protect it, you change it. You create rules around it, you build institutions to oversee it, and you redefine accountability in ways that can be surprisingly rigid. So today, let's talk about the regulator's dilemma and how the very act of governing risk creates new vulnerabilities. So a few weeks ago, my friend and longtime identity thinker, Ian Glazer, gave a talk at Authenticate 2025 called Generational Change, Building Modern IAM Today. And one of the premises that started his talk really stuck with me, and that was that every major shift in how we manage identity systems begins with a crisis of accountability. Now, for our generation, last 25 years, that story begins with Enron. When that company collapsed under the weight of its own fraud, it triggered the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, also known as SOX, which was a sweeping effort to rebuild trust through oversight and auditing. Now, SOX didn't just transform corporate governance, it rewired the architecture for digital systems. To prove that they weren't lying to shareholders, companies had to prove who had access to financial systems, when they had it, and why. And that single requirement gave birth to modern identity and access management industries. User provisioning, quarterly access reviews, separation of duty checks, these weren't technical innovations because someone thought it would be fun. They were compliance artifacts. And to be fair, it worked, mostly. But it also froze an entire generation of identity practices in a compliance mindset. Those controls were built for static environments, servers in data center, monolithic applications, and auditors who could literally count user accounts. That world is ceasing to exist, even as we speak. I'm not actually sure it ever existed quite the way it was written down, but it was close enough for compliance purposes. Today's infrastructure is just a living network of APIs, ephemeral containers, and machine-to-machine connections. Permissions shift constantly, roles are inferred rather than assigned, and yet we're still auditing like it's 2005. The SOX model of accountability, document-based, periodic, human-verified, cannot keep up with the speed and fluidity of digital operations. And there's a deep irony in this. The more we try to prove control, the more we slow down the systems we're trying to protect. And the very act of compliance actually undermines resilience. In an API economy, auditing after the fact is like measuring the depth of a river, you know, with a snapshot at one point. You can capture that moment, but you can't capture the motion. So who decides what's critical? The SOX era has shown us what happens when accountability becomes infrastructure. Once a system is declared essential to the public good, expectations around it change. Auditors appear, processes multiply, documentation becomes proof of virtue. The thing itself, whether it's energy or banking or cloud, may not inherently change, but the burden of accountability does. And that burden influences how much innovation can still happen. It's the quiet tension at the heart of every critical infrastructure debate. As systems become more indispensable, the scrutiny around them intensifies, the stakes rise, and so do the number of checklists that you have to deal with. Now, at the top of that pyramid, right, if you think of it that way, is government. Regulation, in theory, is how society expresses its collective expectations how we agree that safety and reliability matter more than speed or convenience. But in practice, the model of oversight we keep using comes from a much slower era, a world where an inspector could show up with their handy-dandy little clipboard, verifying that the valves were, in fact, turned the right way, and then sign off and they're done. In digital infrastructure, that model doesn't scale. Governments can loom over the industry's figurative shoulder, but they can't actually keep up with what's going on. The old rituals of compliance reports, annual audits, quarterly attestations look more ceremonial when the infrastructure actually changes by the second. And yet the instinct to regulate through prescription persists. When governments declare something critical, they tend to follow with a detailed checklist of how to do the job, codifying process in the name of safety. It's understandable, but it doesn't survive contact with continuous deployment pipelines and automated policy engines. So maybe the harder question isn't what counts as critical, it's how much definition is required. Can we acknowledge essentiality without turning it into a bureaucracy? Can we create accountability without pretending omniscience is possible? Because what governments are really trying to do is be specific without admitting they can't actually see everything. If the last generation of regulation hard-coded accountability into organizations, the next is going to have to hard-code trust into systems without pretending that trust can be reduced to a form. Declaring something critical has always carried the weight of oversight, and the assumption is that governments or their proxies can both understand and manage risk. But as infrastructure becomes more digital and interconnected, that assumption fails. The OECD's Government at a Glance 2025 report put it pretty well that most countries now recognize that resilience demands a whole-of-government approach, one that treats information sharing and trust as policy instruments in their own right. And yet, governance infrastructures built for power grids and pipelines don't fit cloud platforms, APIs, or digital identity systems. The more critical those systems become, the less feasible it is for any single authority to monitor every component. It's the paradox of modern accountability. The more connected systems get, the harder it becomes to define responsibility in a way that scales. There's some interesting research from the Critical Infrastructure Lab and the Internet Society's READ project that make the same point. Resilience now depends less on control and more on coordination. And in principle, that's the right move. I'm not really sure there's any other way to do it, but in practice, it's kind of a trust exercise that few institutions are prepared for. Distributed accountability sounds very progressive, but it suffers from the oldest flaw in organizational theory that when everyone is accountable, no one is actually accountable. It's like a modern bystander effect. Every actor assumes someone else will notice, intervene, or fix the problem, and the chain of command devolves into a web of good intentions. So visibility, right? This is where governance meets imagination. Most regulators can picture centralized oversight. They can picture privatized responsibility, but shared accountability, being collaborative without being pure, wholly amorphous, is much harder to design. And yet, that's what digital infrastructure demands. We don't need omniscience. We need visibility and a clear sense of who moves first when something goes wrong. When coordination feels uncertain, governments reach for the tools that they already understand: classification, jurisdiction, and control. And it's an understandable impulse. No one wants to be caught watching a crisis unfold without clear authority to act. So when infrastructure becomes essential, the default response is to anchor to sovereignty, to say, this part of the network belongs to us, visibility becomes control. But that instinct collides with how the internet actually works. Digital systems don't necessarily respect national borders, and yet the instinct to assert jurisdiction persists. From the European Union's NIS2 directive to the US's NSM22, India's CERT regulations, and a growing number of regional cybersecurity laws, the pattern is very much the same. Protect the systems that you can regulate. Each framework makes sense in isolation. Together, they create a patchwork of compliance zones that overlap, but very rarely align. And the more governments secure their slice of the internet, or attempt to, the more global system fragment. Resilience becomes something you defend domestically instead of something you coordinate internationally. But doing nothing is a little scary, but if doing nothing isn't an option, what does doing something actually look like? The easiest path, as we've talked about, is a compliance model. Expand the machinery of audits, attestations, and oversight.
because it's comfortable, measurable, and very reassuringly familiar, but it's very self-limiting. The checklists don't scale when the systems evolve faster than the paperwork. The compliance work locally, but drags globally. And you're slowing innovation in the name of assurance. Second path is a sovereignty model. Let the nations go ahead and assert their control, make sure that the clouds are domestic, and that the data stays home. And that can strengthen resilience within borders, but it tends to fracture interoperability across those borders. The more countries chase sovereign safety, the more brittle the internet becomes, and you're looking at a federation of kind of incompatible jurisdictions. And then, of course, there's the coordination model of how you would handle all of this. This is the one that globalists like me still root for: shared governance, mutual visibility, collective risk management. But I think these days it's actually the least likely when you're looking at anything at scale, because true collaboration requires transparency, and transparency exposed dependencies that are commercially and strategically sensitive. So in a world leaning towards self-protection, that kind of openness is very rare, both on the national level and in the industry level. So coordination, I don't think, is going to disappear, but I do think it's shrinking from global to regional, from universal to sectoral, from open to semi-compatible, which is not actually the internet we imagined, but it may be the one we have to learn to live with. Each of these paths have trade-offs. Compliance centralizes your process. Sovereignty centralizes your power. Coordination, when it happens, centralizes your trust. And trust, as I mentioned earlier, is possibly one of the most scarce resources we have at the moment. So all of this is coming right back to my internet fragmentation thoughts. What we're seeing here isn't a challenge to prevent fragmentation, because I don't think you can avoid it, but it is to make it survivable. So Ian Glaser's idea of generational change and identity does just keep echoing in my head, because it applies to governance too. Every generation inherits a crisis it didn't design and a set of controls that no longer fit. For ours, that crisis isn't fraud or malfeasance. It's fragility and the uneasy recognition that we've built systems so interdependent that no one actually fully understands them anymore. And if the last generation of regulation was born from a failure of a few companies, the next is going to emerge from the failure of shared systems. So we have to decide what kind of accountability to design in response. Do we double down on compliance and centralization? Something that would make me very sad. Or do we accept that resilience must now be negotiated, sometimes awkwardly, sometimes locally, among the people and institutions who can still see each other across a network? I'm not sure we're going to get to a global framework this time around. I'm not even sure we're going to be able to do that in any given sector. I think we're going to see overlapping, regionally aligned regimes that reflect the trade-offs each society is willing to make between openness, autonomy, and control. Not necessarily failure. It is adaptation, the kind of adjustment complex systems make when they outgrow the rules that shape them. So if the last generation of accountability was about proving control, then perhaps what we can say is the next must be about sharing control, building systems where visibility replaces omniscience and cooperation replaces the illusion of total oversight. So that's the generational change we're living through right now, the shift from auditing the past to governing the present. And if we're lucky, if we're good, if we learn from the trade-offs without repeating them, we might be able to design accountability the way we once designed for uptime. But we'll see how it goes. There's a lot more in my written blog, including links to so many of the things that I did for research for this post and other ones. So if you'd like more information, go there. If you want to reflect on this online and tell me what you'd agreed with or what you didn't, I'd love for that to happen. And with that, have a great rest of your day.
And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.